Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. Keeping Up With Data is the podcast that keeps data enthusiasts up to speed with what is happening in the data world. We bring in the leading minds from the data industry to talk all things career, news, embarrassing stories, failures, and successes.
All right, welcome to Keeping Up With Data. I'm Emily, and this is
Fine.
Woo! And today we have Abby from Verijam, and I'm not going to talk too much more. I'm going to hand the mic to you and say, please introduce yourself. Give us the spiel, your journey, everything.
Sounds good. Nice to meet you, Emily and Pauline, and thank you for having me on your podcast. Keeping Up With Data is super important for everybody these days because it's not just about data. It's about what you do with it. So a little bit about myself. I'm Avi. I grew up in Sydney, but I spent about 12 years in the States. So my accent is going to sound very weird for the listeners and who's going to hear it. I've spent enough time in the US and Australia to completely muddle up my accent. quick story. I did my PhD in artificial intelligence, machine learning back in the day when data science didn't exist as a profession or a career, and worked in the industry along the way, working at software engineering. And then as soon as I finished my PhD, Microsoft called me into US and said, hey, look, why don't you come spend some time here? And so what I went for was 2 years, but 12 years later, we've just come back from the US with my family and now set up camp in Canberra, close to mum and dad in Sydney. And as part of it, had an amazing journey working at some of the amazing companies like Microsoft, Amazon's, Oracle, Teradata, and TrackPhone Wireless before starting my own company called Verijam, where we're making AI simple, accessible, and affordable for all.
So that's super interesting, Abby. I think a lot of our viewers will be able to resonate, especially with the stuff happening around with the AI and, you know, how to get involved into that pathway. So what was, I guess, the calling for you to start, you know, a PhD or a master's in artificial intelligence, you know, way back when it was all very new?
Yeah, look, I was always fascinated with the prospect of AI. Like, imagine the future we saw in Star Trek and Star Wars, right? How do we make that a reality? So kid growing up, going to uni, I did software engineering, but there's always that sort of inkling. I was like, I want to understand how we can make that future reality now, right? And so I went and did, my research was in medical image analysis. Like at that time, helping radiologists automatically analyze, you know, lung diseases and anatomy structure in CT scans so they can, you know, go through the large workload that they have and find efficiencies and be more productive and scale their abilities. So that was the impetus. It just started very, very naturally, and one thing led to another. Though, you know, anyone thinking of starting their journey on doing a PhD, it is a painful journey. You will enjoy it. You'll come out of it you know, really toughened up. I was working full time, by the way. So my journey was a little more longer than a typical PhD. So, you know, I'd work at, my day job was as a software engineer working with a flight simulator company, and my by night and the weekends were spent doing my research. So that was a lot of fun.
That's a lot to juggle. I feel like a lot of people we speak to as well, obviously in the earlier days of their career, are doing exactly that. But it always boggles my mind to think how they are managing it, because like that must be a lot on your plate. How do you prevent burnout? Well, how did you?
Well, you know, the short answer is you don't have a social life at that time. But this is, of course, a long time ago. I mean, you know, you find ways to, you know, still connect. Like we used to catch up with friends every Saturday. We'll go play squash for 2 hours, and then after that, go for dinner and socialize. And so the squash court is fantastic to rush, thrash out all your frustrations of code not working and debugging errors and so forth, and all sorts of fun stuff. But you look, it really comes down to, it's not about how hard or how long you work. It's about whether the work you're doing is satisfying you. You know, if it connects you, like Jeff Bezos had a really interesting idea, which I'm going to butcher the quote, but basically it was around the line that stress comes from not being able to do the things that you think are possible and doable, or not being allowed to do those. And that practically forms the culture of that place. But it's very much about this. If you're having fun and you're engaged by it, of course, there's going to be tough times, but you will get through it.
Yeah, and you'll feel it less as well, I suppose, if you're like passionate and excited by it as well.
So absolutely.
I get that. And yeah. I think from, well, obviously we want to talk a lot about Ferragym today. So I want to like make sure we get a lot of time for that. But I think just to go from sort of the bottom up slightly, obviously you've had a lot of interesting and amazing brands on your CV and you probably learned a lot. Oh gosh, there goes the light. Doesn't matter. Yeah. So can you talk us through maybe, I don't know, some pivotal times in those roles where you've actually had to sort of, I don't know, well, maybe they're like light bulb moments where they've helped your career and maybe you've implemented some things into Ferragym now that you've learned.
Oh, what a great question. So look, every organization I got to work with at taught me something very, very important. Like, for example, when I moved from Microsoft to Amazon, one of the biggest lessons I saw as a company, as a culture, was empowerment and this philosophy of experimentation. You know, when I moved across, some people would ask, well, what's the speed difference? You know, what is it like at moving away from Microsoft? It's an amazing company. Why are you going to Amazon? And at that time, the simplest way to explain it was, you know, I was moving three times faster than I could at Microsoft. And it just was the nature of the team and the culture I was part of. So empowerment was very, very important. You know, when I moved from Amazon to Oracle, I moved away from online retail and you know, recommendations and all those other stuff into new industries like manufacturing, like agriculture, healthcare, and where I was helping Fortune 500 companies figure out their AI and data strategy around these different domains. And that was really important training ground for me to learn about empathy, right? Why is it important to understand each individual organization is unique and you need to understand the people, you need to understand the organization, the culture of that, rather than have a cookie cutter approach to, hey, here's how we're going to do it because we did it there at Amazon this way. No, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, there's every organization has its sort of culture and some of those elements have sort of fed into the company that we're building here, Ferragym. Like our focus is really driving towards equity. Through empowerment, you know, empathy and experimentation. And, you know, those things are fundamental to what we do and building that culture is very, very core.
Absolutely. I suppose that ties back to that point about being adaptable to your new environment and obviously assessing the situation around you and then adjusting to that culture. Like you said, that's something that comes up with M and I all the time when we're speaking to people in the market. And I suppose the direction that we're headed in now, it's about understanding ways that businesses can use AI going forward. Do you have any recommendations in that space, maybe five ways that you can see that happening already or going forward?
Yeah, so we look at – so let me backtrack a little bit, right? The impetus for us to create Ferragym was to address a need that we saw emerging. Like, so when I left TracFone Wireless, you know, we're doing amazing stuff and helped build their AI organization and data science culture, built their data lake and helped them serve 20 million customers, 10 brands with analytics and decision-making support, right? And to help those 10 brands get very unique personalized. And that was translating into NPS scores that were going up, you know, the lowest churn rate, which is fantastic sort of experience. And so when I left TracFone, I realized, look, why is it that most organizations are not doing something like this? And if you really look at it, very few organizations around the world are doing this. And so, you know, there is a big disconnect between the small and medium-sized organizations and what they can use data for and use artificial intelligence, which is really hot and exciting. There's some ideas, but they really don't know have a roadmap to get there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of that AI expertise is very rare. And so it's very expensive. And so only companies like Amazon's and Microsoft's of the world and the Google's can really afford, and they pay really, really high salaries and commanding wages. So that means most businesses can't build their capabilities in-house very quickly and rapidly, let alone know how to get started. So along the way, had a lot of different conversations and we found very interesting sets of blockers for small and medium-sized enterprises adopting these things. And so we started to formulate a sort of a theory around how to get past it. Now, there's lots of things there, but I'll focus on like the two things that I think are really relevant. One is just awareness. Most organizations just don't have an awareness of what is possible and how it applies to their specific needs in business. Right. And so that's really important. How do you develop an understanding? And the second part is there's a gap between the talent and the technology. It's not that the talent that exists in an organization can't use AI. It's just that the technology is poorly designed for the talent to use it. So we call it the talent and technology misalignment. And so those are the two biggest blockers we see as organization using AI. So we have a we sort of help organizations both from a strategy perspective. We run these things called AI readiness workshops, AIR workshops, where we work not just to help you understand what is AI, but how can it be used and what is your roadmap to adopt it, right? Every organization, and remember I talked about empathy with each organization, which is very different. You've got to build a custom roadmap. And then translating it into is how to empower your existing team to take advantages of it without having to send them back to university to do a four-year degree in data science and machine learning, right? How do we address that gap? And so we built Berryjam AI, which is a self-service AI analytical tool, which basically automates me. Like it automates the steps that a good data scientist would take. So our goal is to, I'd be flippant to say like it automates me completely. You know, you can't replace a full data scientist. But we notice 80% of the steps from preparing the data set to figuring out, you know, what are the top features and factors to use, what models to train, how to evaluate, and then be able to interpret in a way that a business user can understand. That's what we've built with Berryjam and we keep building out. So what it means is, organizations that don't have that capacity can, or the talent or the budget to hire expensive data scientists, can start making steps towards it. Does that make sense, Pauline?
I feel like there's like a, like you said, a gap where people know they need it, they just don't know how to get there. So it sounds like the start of that is for you to come in and actually help them pave the way to understand what they do need. And it might not be that they need that yet. It might be like, however many years down the line or whatever, because they're not ready. But that's a brilliant way to look at it.
Yeah. And I think it also sort of ties into that point that not one size fits all. I think a lot of people are getting confused with, how you can implement AI. And they're saying, is there just a way that you can give it to us, like follow that model, and it's simple as that. But you really have to come in, look at, there's so many different values and tailor it to each person's situation or business. And that's super interesting. I think so many people would love to hear more about that.
Just on that, like, there are so many different ways people can use AI. But like right now, just because Gen AI is all the rage, everyone thinks that's the only AI out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have a very simple framework to understand the different types of problems of you can solve using AI. There are five types of problems. One is finding stuff. And you've been using it, like Google search is a way is an AI to find stuff, whether it's data or documents or whether it's you're looking for planes or forest fires and aerial imagery. That's finding stuff, right? Another type is making stuff, whether it's making documents with ChatGPT, whether making art with Midjourney, or whether it's making new molecules and testing them for their stability for treatment, right? Or making new structures. So those are find and make, and people are using those. But there are other parts as well. There's one where you connect the dots between different parts of the business, different characteristics to find relationships. Because once you can connect those dots, then you can also do the fourth part, which is making a prediction. You can predict what will happen, right? Yeah. So connecting the dots help you understand what's happening in an organization. Why are customers leaving and churning? Why did the machine fail down? And now if you can do that, you can also take not only predict, but also take strategic steps to prevent it. And of course, the fifth part is just optimizing. How do you optimize different components? I'm a small shop and I have certain inventory. I want to optimize my inventory selection for what I need to sell. That rather than is right now is just, well, what I sold, I'll just order more. But is it the most profitable thing? Is it the right combination of things? Seasonality effects change it. So you've got, those are five very simple types of problems where businesses can use AI. What we help people to do with the AI readiness workshop is often to help them understand, well, what is important to me?
Yeah.
Which one's the lowest hanging fruit? And which of these things do I need to prioritize?
Yeah, it's kind of like that whole saying of like people tend to go just launch into solution mode when you tell them a problem or when you're venting, but they never really ask more and more questions to identify what actually is needed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that. And can you say those five again? Because I feel like this will be a good nugget for people to just, even if we snip it on LinkedIn or YouTube or whatever, the five were, I remember, connect.
The first one is find.
Yeah.
Find. Make. Making things in generative art. Mm-hmm. Then it is connect, finding the connections between things, understanding the relationships. Then you're talking about predict, making predictions about the forecast or the new new places. And then optimize, how do I combine multiple variables together to get what I need, whether it's increasing revenue or reducing cost.
Yeah, good. I like that. Simple terms.
Yeah.
But I feel like AI has that big sort of daunting, like, oh my God, what does it involve, you know, terminology around it. Yeah. So that was well done.
Very well simplified.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sort of doubling back a bit here, but I just really wanted to talk about this because we have connected in the past. And I think one of the most impressive things that you've done at the industry level was that Amazon Go retail shopping experience that you helped design for that team. Obviously, that speaks to like that stock analysis and prediction modeling that you sort of mentioned there earlier. But could you talk us through that process and I guess how successful that was? Because that was amazing to read about.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I got to work with some amazing people on some really, really cool projects. Amazon Go, if you haven't heard of it, was the concept where it's a physical retail store.
Yeah.
You walk in, you scan your phone QR code, and then you put the phone away. And as you walk around, you pick up stuff from the shelf and you put it back, and then you walk out. And as you walk out, you will get a summary of what you ordered and bought at that time. And so the idea was to use sensors in the roof, in the shelves, and track what items you're picking up, putting back, to create a sort of a magical experience. That was the brief we got from Jeff Bezos, right? Create a magical shopping experience, which, you know, is not very easy to achieve, right? And, you know, there are about 40 plus stores, I think, in US and UK that use this technology. And there's been some discussion around, well, how they're re-pivoting that technology. But the concepts there was to create focus on the end user or customer experience. You know, a lot of people talk a little bit about using AI to reduce costs or not, or want to optimize this. What was amazing about this project was it was so focused on the end user experience. I don't know about you, but I hate the self-checkout system at Woolies and Coles. I'm sorry if you're listening. It's so painful.
It really stuffs up. Yeah, you get it wrong and you've got to call the attendant. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's such a terrible customer experience. And for, you know, considering I built Amazon Go, I really feel the pain because I know it can be better. So I was part of the team. We would experiment and build different prototypes. So there's a way, way, way early. It was still very secretive at that time. And so we tried different technologies. There's some patents out there that sort of talk about the different technologies we've sort of considered using cameras, weight sensors, you know, RFID chips, all sorts of stuff. We tried putting cameras on the carts and the baskets, all sorts of things. But the fundamental thing we always were focused on, how natural and intuitive is it for the customer experience? And why is this important is if you think about the relationship as a B2C company needs to have is a really strong relationship with their customers, right? You want to create that positive feel. You know, if the checkout person, the poor person at the checkout who's, you know, furiously scanning your items, packing it for you, and then also trying to make small talk and build an engagement. You know, and then they might go, oh, look, did you get everything? And you go, oh, shit, I forgot milk. But you're not going to tell them, stop, I forgot milk. Let me go back and pick up milk, because you kind of feel bad about the poor checkout person, right? that's not a really good opportunity to build customer relationship. But if you have a sort of a checkout system which doesn't require, you know, that poor checkout person furiously scanning stuff, now they can be in the aisles, help you when you are shopping, help you find the things that you need and build a rapport. Sadly, a lot of the organizations have gone down the route of creating self-checkout systems, which are not really helping the customer experience. They just kind of optimize for cost, but not experience.
That's so true. Well, that's amazing. What an achievement for you to have built that and to be able to like leverage that in your now business as well.
Yeah, I mean, those were amazing experiences. But what more than technology, it teaches you how to look at the problem with a different lens. We host these monthly AI talks in as part of Berry Jam in collaboration with Canberra Innovation Network. And so we sort of create a place where it's very safe. You don't have to be an expert. It is very much about your novice person who doesn't know anything about AI but want to talk about it, learn about it. And so often we have good discussions. This happens every second Thursday of every month. So we do it at lunchtime. So you can join us remotely. You can come in person as well. But the discussions often look at different implications of it. And I remember one such discussion was around, look, hey, I could use technology to reduce costs. And we always help people to figure out and look at, well, you got to look at costs, but cost in the context of what is the effect on customer experience, what is the effect on long-term revenue. There are all sorts of dimensions to think about.
Awesome. And if someone was to were to attend one of these talks, Abby, how would they then progress? Let's say you're able to provide, you know, some answers to some of the questions that they have. What could they next do to maybe get in touch with your business and further chats with what you guys do, I suppose?
Well, shameless plug, go to berryjam.com. Berryjam is B-E-R-R-I-J-A-M. So there's no Y in Berryjam. Why? Because we just didn't think it was necessary. Berryjam.com is the place. You can go find details about all the stuff we're doing and get in touch with us. And if you want to join AI Talks, they're held hybrid. So if you can't come into Canberra, you can join us online at second Thursdays of every month.
That's really good.
Very good.
I was going to ask about, you obviously have led like massive teams and quite intelligent teams of different types of skill sets, natures, like nationalities even. Like, what's your experience with dealing with building out teams and then once they're built, like nurturing? Like you've talked about empathy there. You obviously learned a lot about, like, I suppose that side of the coin. So yeah, I'd love to know a bit more about that from your perspective.
Yeah, it's building a data practice is often very, very challenging for a lot of businesses because of the, you know, very unique personality and expertise of the people who are often involved, right? So you have very, very highly technical people who want to live their life in algorithms and data and code. And on the other side of the spectrum, you've got business teams who get scared the first time someone writes 1 + 5 on a whiteboard, right? The equation, right? So you've got to build a culture of a mutual respect and empathy. And it's very hard to do. One of our experiences, we're trying to build a sort of a cohesive organization. And it was a challenge because there was not a lot of trust. You know, business didn't trust the technical folks, and the technical folks felt not respected or loved. And so you've got to break those barriers down by building trust within the organization and the team members, right? So you got to align on the shared vision, but also start to build trust by getting them to spend more time with each other, not artificially, not like, hey, now you got a new buddy you got to sit around with. You've got to create an opportunity where people collaborate and solve the purpose in a very meaningful way, right? So I used to create these organizations where we would go in, rather teams, we would call them tiger teams. It was a blend of a data scientist, a data engineer, and a business analyst. And the trio together would work on a problem, bringing their different perspectives and expertise. And when you do that, you not only bridge the gap between the organization and the skill set and mindsets, but you actually have a very well-rounded solution to the problem you're trying to solve because you're looking at it from different lenses.
What does the tiger come from then? Why is it called a tiger team?
Well, you got to have a cool team name, right?
Yeah.
You
gotta... I want to be part of the tiger
maybe
team.
It's fierce. Yeah, maybe it's inferring fierce. I love that. What's the like biggest, I don't know, maybe not achievement, but yeah, maybe achievement. Like what have you been sort of witnessing from the team leadership and building perspective that you would like say, oh, that was my light bulb moment when I've really like taken this team off, or like we've really started kicking goals?
Oh, that's going to be tough, but actually I'll tell you what I'm really proud of. All right. Mm. This one particular initiative at TrackPhone when I was there, we call it the KSR team. The KSR team had license to kill stupid rules. And the whole idea was to help organization look at the bureaucracy and the rules that they have in place that are no longer relevant. They were relevant some time ago, but they're no longer relevant, but are now creating friction for people, whether it is budget approval processes, right? Maybe it is about accessing training, right? Maybe it is about streamlining a process that was constructed 10 years ago, but we're just still doing it that way because, you can't change it. And so we read this sort of around this grassroots sort of initiative across TrackPhone where people would, were little agents. They got their 00 numbers and badges for taking initiative to go and find opportunities within the business. Because at the end of the day, your organization, your people know where the bottlenecks are. And they know what are the pain points for their customers, and they know what are the pain points for themselves. And if you empower them with the idea that they can go and identify and address and resolve these things, sometimes it was as simple as killing the stupid rule. Sometimes it was modifying the rule and the procedure. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it was to say, hey, look, it's not really a stupid rule. It has its purpose. Right. So you create a sort of a deeper understanding of things that are in the way of people, but also streamline the process. So we had a measure called the BMI, Bureaucratic Mass Index of the organization, and we would track and see how we were doing against the BMI. So getting the company more streamlined and efficient as we would worked.
Wow. It's a good use of BMI. I mean, that's obviously another play on words.
Very good.
I love that. I was curious as well in the data and AI space. Obviously, there's a lot of people looking to hire this kind of skill set now, and whether they're going in with knowledge or they're going in blindly and they're just we need AI, give me an AI specialist. What, in your opinion, defines someone who has that core skill set to be able to work on proper AI implementation, problems, Gen AI?
Yeah, look, I'll talk a little bit about data scientists or my expectation of data scientists. We data science, by the way, role is much, much more popular and bigger in America than it is in Australia that I've noticed here.
Yeah.
The role of a data scientist really is, it was called out the sexiest job of the 20th century back in the day. It was really, really exciting. And it was also very exciting because it really requires three strong strengths areas, right? One is they have to be scientists. Why? Because they're often operating in unknown territory, cutting edge. They've got to figure out the problem and the solution. They've got to approach a problem as a scientist, look at what's out there, bring it together. So they've got to have that analytical mindset of a scientist. They also have to be a programmer or a technical person who can get their hands dirty with code. I can't just simply conceptualize on a whiteboard and then expect someone else to write my code. I still write code every day, by the way. And the goal here is to make sure that you are, you're not blocking yourself dependent on someone else to make progress, because they probably don't know how to write that code because you're creating something new. And the third dimension is you got to be an expert communicator. And that doesn't mean just stand up and tell everybody or write a publication, but communicator in the sense of understanding the different business stakeholders, the people who are involved, the customer needs, understand their needs and articulate them and then convey the value of the work you're doing. Right. You can't just simply say, oh, I made this amazing model and then expect the executive to understand. Yeah, well done. No, they wouldn't have a clue why this is important. So if you have those three attributes in the person, that makes for a really, really strong data scientist and more impactful data scientist, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's become more prevalent that you need that like communication piece because like you said earlier on, it was very much like, okay, cool, the title and the skill set, let's go. And then a lot of things fell down because there was all these fancy, nice models that looked really cool but actually made no sense to a lot of people. So, yeah, I agree. I like that spin on it.
So it also goes back, I think, to that disconnect that you were talking about earlier between the business and the technical. If you're not able to communicate effectively, then you're always going to have that, I suppose, that gap between the two parties. And in order to be a fully fledged data scientist, you need to be able to, I guess, articulate, you know, the models and the codes that you're building to be effective in the business. So, yeah, it's super interesting. Thanks, Evan.
I was going to ask around the, like, you guys, obviously, for us, it's a no-brainer. Like, you stand out to us as a company that if I was looking for, like, a consultancy like you guys, I'd be, like, straight in, this is amazing, like, clear. But what sets you, like, apart from competitors? And do you have that many that you see that are really, like, playing in your space that are doing it correctly or well, I should say?
So, you know, keep in mind, we're a very unique approach, right? We're both an advisory, an educator, a strategist, but also product developer and service developer, right? Now, you know, typically our motivation is to always stay nimble and agile. And so our goal is not to build up bureaucracy and the procedures that are typical of a large, you know, big four consulting company, right? We don't have the depth, but we do bring the breadth of people that we can bring on the bench, but we have extreme depth in terms of the skill set that we've got on the table, right? You've got my experiences, which have been fantastic, and I've been very lucky. But there's Ruth, who's a co-founder on my team. She brings with her amazing experiences from Microsoft, where, you know, she built some real-time document analysis and query system, which would consider hundreds of millions of documents and provide real-time feedback and support for, you know, your call center tech support people. So as they're talking, they're getting documents to help them address the customer need, right? To build that sort of capability in AI is not easy. But we also have a very blended organization, right? So we've got Ashwin, who used to be part of Atlassian and helped them grow their operations in India and build their engineering practice. We've got Ian in Boston. He is a former U.S. Navy intelligence officer, but also an MBA and helps us look at problems in government and organizational decision-making business from that perspective. And there's, of course, Jag. Jag is a mechanical engineer by training, who designed Boeing aircraft, but also helps build the community and outreach. So we've got a sort of a blended organization in terms of how we look at things. We're not just one thing only. So that's unique about us. We're very much about empowering organizations to grow themselves, right? Empowerment is one of our key values in addition to empathy and experimentation. So that's the other part, that our goal is not to go to organizations and take over their data science practice. Our goal is to help them get started, build that competency themselves and own it, not just have, oh my God, I'm dependent on Berryjam or some other external consulting company to even get stuff done.
Yeah, it sounds like all those skill sets sound like incredibly rare and also highly complementary. So it sounds like a bit of really incredible SWAT team or something.
Yeah, I was going to say.
A tiger team, perhaps.
Yeah,
tiger team. There you go.
That's so good. How did you all connect? Is it from previous, like, experience that you've worked together or?
So I went to New South Uni, right? So I did my undergrad there, I did my PhD. So But when I was at uni, I met Ashwin there when he was studying, but also when I was at uni, I started a comedy show called CSU Review at UNSW, and that was back in the day. So Ruth and I know each other through the network of the CSU Review. By the way, you should go check out CSU Review at UNSW. I went to a 20th anniversary show a couple of years ago. It was just amazing.
No way. Yeah.
Oh my God, I've never heard of it, but must go.
Yeah, so if you're a UNSW student, you probably will see some banners around stuff, but it was very, very interesting sort of, you know, if data science didn't work out, I was going to pursue drama and acting. But the other side of it was Ian and I met through mutual friends while I was in States, and then, of course, Jag is my beautiful, lovely wife, who's been supporting and tolerating my adventures all throughout the decade.
Yeah, you've spun up a few things, haven't you? The Data Jam series as well. Is that right?
We're doing what are called Berry Jam Jams. These are hackathon events. So we've been doing some form of hackathon for the last 5 years. So last year and this year, we did Berry Jam Jam with University of New South Wales students. So, in fact, this week they should be working on finalizing their submission, which deadline is in 2 days. And the goal here is to get students excited about practicing their skills, what they're learning at college and university, in real-world application problems. So the jam for this year, the students have to come up with an algorithm that would predict a yes or no outcome on small amounts of image data. So, for example, is you know, predict if this image is Gen AI or not, right? So that's a very important problem and a real world problem. Is it synthetic, generated, or real? The another one is to say, is it weed or not weed? Like, do you need more weed killer or not? Like, because, you know, that's ecology impact. So imagine building a robot that can sort of optimize the spend then. And then we've also create fun problem where, you know, it is like, is this soundtrack epic or not, right? So they could use the same ML models to think a little bit about translating music into images and building predictive models from there.
Oh my gosh, I really want your job now.
Yeah. That's super interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you can come hang out with us anytime you want, Emily, and you know, do the stuff we do.
I've actually never been to Canberra, so I must visit. Come to one of those workshops as well.
Absolutely. No, you come over. And you know, if you want to work on some projects with us, more than happy. Look, we invite collaboration. We've been working with a bunch of organizations here in Canberra. One is CyberSea, where their focus is on improving people's literacy around cybersecurity threats in the age of AI and data science, right? And so we're looking at always creating new collaborations and ways that we can help. Our mission is very simple. How do you make AI as simple, as accessible and affordable for most people? That means building communities, building software, building knowledge and training and so forth.
Yeah, awesome. I was going to say one last question before we go into a little bit about, I suppose, you, your team, and why people would work with you if you were. They were looking to be sort of hired by you. What is the US super, super ahead of Australia? Like, because everyone always says that, and same with the UK. Like, what have you seen? Because you've got the best view of both, really.
Yeah, look, US is culturally different from Australia. And so there are cultural differences that have an impact on how businesses look at things. Australia is phenomenal when it comes to raw talent, when it comes to art, music, sports, even research. But where I think US does a better job of is empowering this talent to turn into products and businesses. You know, Australian appetite for VC-like investments, they're not like, so we sometimes joke, are they really venturing into risky territory, or are they just bankers looking for a safe return? So it's very much a cultural thing that is very, very prevalent. So of course America's bigger size, lots of market. That's why we operate both in US and in Australia simultaneously. Some of our customers are from there. But yeah, culturally, there is a difference. And I'm not saying one way or the other, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm saying that's the difference that exists. And that's why there is a brain drain of amazing talent. Why did I leave to go to US? Because I couldn't have found those opportunities here and grow as much as I wanted to grow in the field and space. So.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's good context. Because I was always curious. Everyone always says it at a high level like point, but that makes perfect sense. People don't feel as like happy to take risks maybe here. That's kind of what I'm getting. But well, what about like, let's wrap it up with a bit of Bear Jam. Tell us a bit more about like maybe follow on from the shameless plugs, you know, like what about Bear Jam will get people excited to work for you apart from what already you've said? Because to be honest, you've probably already done the selling, but that, and then obviously I suppose what you guys are looking for as your roadmap to grow as a company that people can kind of start following you and potentially introduce themselves and I suppose be a part of your network.
Yeah, well, first thing everybody should do is go to LinkedIn and look up Berry Jam, B-E-R-R-I-J-A-M, and then follow us there. We're going to use that as a conduit to share a lot of information as well. Look, Berry Jam's mission is very, very simple and articulate, right? Articulated as making AI simple and accessible. And that means it's a journey that involves not just empowering people with products and services, but also guidance through AI readiness workshops that we host. In fact, we're going to be doing some AI readiness workshops over the next few months. So if friends of your podcast and your listeners, if they're interested to sign up, we'd love to offer anyone who's your podcast listener a 50% discount to our services and offerings. So if you want to reach out and learn about getting how you get your organization ready for AI, or you already are there and you just need ways to accelerate your team's efficiency and turnaround time by 100x, just send us an email. You have sent an email to jam@berryjam.com and just tell us that you come from the pod and we will get you that discount and get you set up. The goal here is for us to make sure what we offer, get you started on, aligns with your needs. I'm not just going to give you cookie cutter slapstick approach. That's it. I want to make sure it's a good experience and you get value out of that engagement.
Yeah, awesome. That's so generous of you. They can dial in as well, right? If they can't be there.
If you want to join the AI talks, AI talks, you can definitely dial in. There's if you go to berryjam.com, there's all the details around AI talks under the community section, or you can just go berryjam.com/AI talks. You can attend virtually. They tend to happen 12:30 every second Thursday, second Thursday of every month. So you can join in. We're still trying to finalize the speaker for the next month's talk, but that's where you'll find out on the website. Last week we had someone talk about cybersecurity and literacy. The week before was the use of AI in improving completion rates of internships and education in schools. So all kinds of interesting projects. And you can also go and check out the existing talks. We record every session and have it available.
Oh, great. That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely put that in the body of this sort of podcast so that people can copy and paste that email and get in touch and put in keeping up with data or something, whatever the code is.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, we're kind of probably nearing the end. Was there anything you sort of wanted to finish with, Avi, before we wrap it up?
No, look, I really appreciate you guys and having me as a guest, and I appreciate the amazing work you guys are doing and making sure that people are talking about data and keeping up with data. Look at about what you do once you have the data. What's next? Right? Are you using it for better decision making? And so some of our goals is to make sure the data is not just a collection activity, but also a driver for your business, driver for innovation, driving improvement, enhanced customer experience. Those things matter to us. So happy to anybody to reach out to us, drop us a note, connect with me on LinkedIn. Love to hear your thoughts and even tell me where I'm wrong and what I'm missing, and happy to engage.
Oh, that.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Abby. It's really great chatting to you. I think we can both agree.
Absolutely.
Really good.
This was so much fun.
A lot of rich information and insights people can take away.
Yes. Yeah. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
All right.
Take care.
So something really important for us here at Precision Sourcing is mental health. It's something we've been focused on a lot over the last year or so. And we're lucky enough to have partnered with the Black Dog Institute. And we're going to be doing a lot of events with them this year. A lot of our events, money will be going towards them. And they're out there aiming to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. So if you wish to support the cause, please donate via the link in the bio on this podcast. And you'll be seeing a lot more information about Black Dog over the next year.